Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as The News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, Here Comes the Sun, from the Beatles' Love album. And we'll be hearing more about this album later on in today's program, and we'll close out today's program with it as well. And this is dedicated to Bella B. of Raleigh, who inspired the selection of this particular album.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
Thank you, Bella B. But now, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us today from www.squidoo.com. Question number one, multiple choice. Where did the name of the group The Beatles come from? Was it A? It was a name of a motorcycle gang in the 1953 Marlon Brando movie, The Wild One. Or was it B, a fear of bugs that John Lennon had expressed during one of the group's first rehearsals? Or was it C, a reference to the fact that without a good drummer, they were beatless, that's B-E-A-T-less. Hence the spelling of the group's name, Beatles, as opposed to B-E-E-T-L-E-S. Or was it answer D, a comment made by Ringo Starr during a dinner that he could eat anything except beets? Question number two, also multiple choice. What Beatles song is the most commercially successful single? Was it A, Let It Be, B, Here Comes the Sun, C, Yesterday, D, I Want to Hold Your Hand, or was it E, Hey Jude? Hint, here's an instrumental snippet from that song.
Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better.
Well, not entirely instrumental, but it was a hint. Nevertheless, what was the name of that song? Because that was, in fact, the most commercially successful single of the Beatles. The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The transition section of today's program is brought to us once again by BGORecords.com from their series, Today in Rock History. And today is the weekend of March 5th and 6th. What were the number one hits in rock history this weekend? Well, back in 1965, you may remember it was The Temptations with My Girl. And back in 1970, 5 years after that, Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Waters was number one this weekend. And finally, back in 1983, it was Michael Jackson, Billie Jean, at number one this weekend. If you were born on March the 5th, you share a birthday with Andy Gibb, 1958. Or if you were born on March the 6th, you share a B-Day with Mary Wilson of the Supremes. She was born on March the 6th, 1944, as was Dave Gilmour of Pink Floyd, but he was born 3 years later, 1947, on March the 6th. Deaths this weekend include John Belushi, the Blues Brothers. He died on this day back in 1982. Miscellany in rock history this weekend, 1955, Elvis makes his first ever U.S. TV appearance. And back in 1970, the Beatles release Let It Be single. And back in 1975, Rod Stewart and Britt Eklund begin their highly publicized romance after meeting at a party given by Joni Mitchell in L.A.
Another bride, another June, another sunny, honeymoon, another season, another reason for making whoopee. A lot of shoe, lots of shoe, a lot of rice.
Rod Stewart. In local rock news, we see this article written by Caitlin Farrell on News and Observer, printed on the February 25th, 2011, entitled Guitar Show Makes Its Way to Morrisville. Stacks of aged guitar cases lined the walls. Hundreds of people streamed in and out. There were men in leather jackets, and there were gaggles of women. This wasn't a sold-out concert, the hope of a rising star. Rather, it was a hotel conference room near Raleigh-Durham International Airport, where years of rock and roll dreams faded into the hands of used guitar dealers. At the International Vintage Guitar Collectors Association show Thursday, the sentimental love of a classic guitar and the promise of a crisp check met, then parted ways. The week-long guitar show travels the world with one purpose: buy guitars from the locals and sell to collectors online. At least 300 people have come to the show since it opened Tuesday in Morrisville. Hearing these people's stories about these guitars is the best, said Doug Lane, who co-managed the show. There's a lot of attachment to these instruments. Take Steve Wilson of Raleigh on Thursday. He brought a Honey Tone, Abalone Bound, C.F. Martin Acoustic. Wilson recorded part of his first full-length rock album with the 28-year-old guitar at Abbey Road Studios in London, where the Beatles also recorded. You play a guitar long enough, it becomes an extension of your body, said Wilson, 27, who leads the Steve Wilson Band. His band tours up and down the East Coast. Every ding and nick has a story about it from a place you were playing. Battle scars, he said. Wilson sold a year-old Gibson Les Paul guitar, but he decided not to part with the Martin, which was handmade in Pennsylvania. I'm a spoiled guitar player, Wilson said. I learned on some of the best, Wilson said. It's nice to keep this stuff in the family. Frank D'Amico had a similar separation anxiety. He brought his Martin, which dates back to the 1970s. He, too, decided not to sell. I bought it from this guy in Woodstock in New York, and the price is okay, but not enough, said D'Amico, who lives in Chapel Hill. But many do part ways with their axes. The International Vintage Guitar Collectors Association, founded in 1994, buys about $450,000 worth of guitars each month. It also buys any other instrument, violins, saxophones, drums, you name it. The group's mantra, if it plays, it pays. And it's usually as simple as that. A seller presents an instrument to an association representative, who then values the instrument and makes a pitch to about maybe 10,000 online bidders. Then the representative then makes an order to the seller. And once they agree on a price, if they agree, a check is written on the spot. Instruments made before 1970 are considered vintage, but the group will buy new models too, and while guitars are the norm for the shows, unconventional collectibles can be sold too. Woody Kerfman's 60-year-old miniature drum set stands no more than 3 feet tall. It was given to him when he was 6 and has been kept intact, complete with tiny snare drums, a cymbal, triangle, and bass drum. It still makes music, said his wife, Janice Kerfman of Garner, who brought in the set. It was in our storage, and we said, if somebody else can enjoy it, why not? This next article is entitled Music on the Mind. It's written by Nancy K. Dess on the 1st of September, 2000. In other words, this was about 11 years old, but it was last reviewed on the 15th of June back in 2010 from Psychology Today. Nancy Dess, by the way, Ph.D., is professor of psychology at Occidental College and senior scientist at the American Psychological Association in Washington, D.C. Music and science may seem to inhabit different universes, one of beauty and emotion, the other of logic and reason, but now neuroscientists are placing them in the same solar system. Norman M. Weinberger, Ph.D., professor of neurobiology and behavior at the University of California at Irvine, explains how new research is beginning to reveal the role of music in brain function and our lives. This is an interview, then. The first question is music in our genes? Answer by Norman Weinberger. Music exists in every culture, and infants have excellent musical abilities that cannot be explained by learning. Mothers everywhere sing to their infants because babies understand it. Music seems to be a part of our biological heritage. Question. So our brains evolved to process it? Well, not in the sense that a particular chunk of brain is musical. It's complex, because music has many elements, rhythm, melody, and so on. For example, certain cells in the right hemisphere respond more to melody than to language. The article skips down. Question. Are sound patterns recognized innately, or are they learned? Answer. Neurons learn to prioritize some sounds when a tone becomes important because it signals food, for instance. The cell's response to that tone increases. This finding revolutionized thinking about brain organization by showing that learning is not a higher brain function, but rather one that occurs in the sensory systems themselves. The article skips down. Question. Does listening to music similarly shape the brain? Answer. A few years ago, Shaw and colleagues reported on the Mozart effect, the finding that college students who listened to Mozart for 10 minutes performed better on spatial-temporal tests, like pattern matching. Regrettably, this finding sprouted wings, such as the belief that kids get smarter after 10 minutes of Mozart. Intriguing as the finding is, it seems to have no practical implications because the effect lasts only a few minutes. Questions. So does listening to music have any long-term effect on the brain? Answer. Yes, but only with time and practice. Evidence suggests that long-term musical involvement reaps cognitive rewards in language skills, reasoning, and creativity, and boosts social adjustment. Music exercises the brain. Playing an instrument, for instance, involves vision, hearing, touch, motor planning, emotion, symbol interpretation, all of which activate different brain systems. This may be why some Alzheimer's patients can perform music long after they have forgotten other things. Final question. It seems a shame that music instruction has disappeared from many schools. Answer. It is a disgrace. Some people claim that music programs are too expensive, but killing music programs deprives children of intellectual, personal, and social benefits. I know it sounds corny, but by failing to foster musicality, our society is wasting its potential. Perhaps if more people knew music's true benefits, it would be restored to more schools. This next article was published in the Wall Street Journal by Ethan Smith on January 20, 2011. A number one album, but a small slice. Week's top seller, Mark's low point, underscoring waning sales of music. In the latest sign of waning consumer demand for recorded music, the Billboard 200 album sales chart just registered a dubious distinction. The number one position was held by an album that sold fewer CDs and downloads than any predecessor since at least 1991, when accurate weekly tallies first became available. The 44,000 units sold by the band Cake's sixth album, Showroom of Compassion, marked the second week in a row that the number one album notched a new low watermark. Last week's chart was dominated by Taylor Swift's Speak Now, which sold just 52,000 copies, according to Nielsen SoundScan. The lackluster performance by the Cake album was doubly notable. Ms. Swift's album had been on the charts for nearly 3 months by the time it set its record. The Cake album, by contrast, was new in stores last week, making its performance in the chart released Wednesday the worst ever number one debut. As with movies and DVDs, many, if not most, music albums enjoy their strongest sales their first week out and then trail off quickly. The first 3 months of the year are typically slow for the music industry, following a surge of releases in November and December to capitalize on holiday sales. The article skips down. The declining numbers at the top of the chart reflect a broad downturn in recorded music sales. Last year, U.S. consumers bought 326.2 million music albums on CD or digital download, the lowest tally since SoundScan started releasing the numbers in 1993, and 58% below the peak in the year 2000.
Chill me to the bone this year, and something in my mind just got away.
Being in the place, this is from that Cake album. The article skips down and ends with this. For bands like Cake, which released a few albums on major labels but never hit the big time, the lowered bar represented something of an opportunity. Before last week, Cake hadn't released an album in 7 years, and its previous peak chart position was number 13 in 2001.
And something in my mind just got away. It's all behind you now. No moving on. They'll never find you now. You're moving on.
So what do you know about today's featured rock album, The Beatles' Love? Well, the following information comes to us from two sources, Wikipedia and Tom Allett in Amazon.co.uk. Love is a Grammy Award-winning soundtrack remix album of music recorded by The Beatles, released in November 2006. The album was produced by George Martin and his son, Giles Martin, who said, "What people will be hearing on the album is a new experience, a way of reliving the whole Beatles musical lifespan in a very condensed period." The album was conceived as a stage show soundtrack to Cirque du Soleil Las Vegas spectacular of the same name, but appears to have taken on a life of its own, whereas the Beatles' last release, One, delivered the over familiar hits in a nice, simple package, Love is a melange of the familiar and obscure, all literally mixed together in one 78-minute audio collage, which succeeds in reminding this listener just why the Beatles truly are, as Lennon put it, toppermost of the poppermost. The Martins began work on Love after getting permission from Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, Yoko Ono, and Olivia Harrison, the latter two representing John Lennon and George Harrison, respectively. In discussing the project, Giles Martin noted that elements were used from recordings in the Beatles' catalog, the original four tracks, eight tracks, and two tracks, and used this palette of sounds and music to create a sound bed. McCartney and Starr, the surviving members of the Beatles, responded very positively to the album. McCartney noted that, "This album puts the Beatles back together again because suddenly there's John and George with me and Ringo." Starr commended the Martins for the album and said that the album is really powerful for me, and I even heard things I'd forgotten we recorded. Love placed at number 3 in the UK albums chart during the first week of release. It was also successful in the United States, debuting at number 4 in the Billboard 200, where it was certified platinum in late 2006. At the 50th Annual Grammy Awards in 2008, the album won Grammys in two categories, Best Compilation Soundtrack Album and Best Surround Sound Album. Love was released as a digital download in the iTunes Store in February of 2011. Love contains elements from 130 individually, commercially released and demo recordings of the Beatles, and is a complex remix and polymix of multiple songs known as a mashup. While a complete list has not been disclosed, highlights of how the elements were mixed have been noted by the press. It begins with a twittering of birdsong lifted from the World Wildlife Fund version of Across the Universe. And once the triple-tracked a cappella harmonies of Because enter, followed by opening guitar snatches from A Hard Day's Night and the drumming guitar solos from The End, with percussion from Sgt. Pepper's and the orchestral swell from A Day in the Life, leading into a fired-up Get Back, it becomes obvious that this is far more than just another Beatles compilation. There's no new Beatles material per se, but the songs are all approached differently. Some are cut together in a flawlessly mixed medley. Indeed, the album is so refreshing that it comes off as hearing the Beatles again for the very first time. The songs almost sound like new songs, and the transitions between them sound as revolutionary as did their Sgt. Pepper's album. Check out, for example, Eleanor Rigby, Julia, I Am the Walrus.
All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
Some of the songs reassemble different backing tracks and vocal performances to create new spins on old classics. But all the songs are revitalized considerably, even in its weakest moments, which probably work better in the context of the show itself. Love is still a formidable prospect, and one has to admire Martin's willingness to go out on a limb with such a project.
I'd like to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden, in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden, in the shade.
The song Octopus's Garden, according to USA Today and Pop Matters, contains the string arrangement from Goodnight sound effects used in Yellow Submarine and elements from Lovely Rita and even Helter Skelter. A BBC article reported that George Martin chose to use an early version of the recording, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, for the album and wrote a new orchestral backing for the track. In the song, I Want to Hold Your Hand, the Martins stated that they mixed elements from both the studio and the Hollywood Bowl live performances. And the song is introduced by Ed Sullivan from the original introduction of the Beatles on his television show.
Here they are, the Beatles!
Finally, while purists may complain that the cut-and-pasted nature of the project is simply tampering with perfection, at the very least it'll make them reach for the originals and enjoy them all over again. For newcomers and everyone else, it makes a fine listen. Both in its sonic clarity, the actual tracks are the best they've sounded on CD, and audacious nature. The Beatles, Love. In contemporary rock news, we see this review. CDs of the week, three new releases, and the one we're going to be looking at is called The Decemberist, The King is Dead. It's given 4 stars, and this is published in The Week magazine on February 11, 2011. Indie rock's overachievers have found success by curtailing their ambitions, said Noel Murray in the AV Club. On their 6th album, the Decemberists steer away from the complicated arrangements and baroque history lessons of 2009's The Hazards of Love and return to their folk roots. The King is Dead, the nation's #1 selling album last week, is a panoply of rustic Americana framed by crisp, lean layers of acoustic guitar, pedal steel, and harmonica. It's a revelation to see what frontman Colin Malloy can accomplish when he keeps his songs compact and simple, said Will Hermes in Rolling Stone. The rollicking Calamity song, which features R.E.M.'s Peter Buck, sounds lifted from that band's murmur. Gillian Welch also appears, buoying much of the album with close harmonies, from the jangly Down by the Water to the sweet ache of June Hymn. What's remarkable is how much richness and beauty the Portland, Oregon band has packed into this succinct disc. Here then, The Decemberists, from their album The King is Dead.
And it's 1, 2, 3 on the wrong side of Lee. What were you meant for? What were you meant for? And it's 7, 8, 9, you get your shuffle back in line. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again.
The last article today comes from the Charlotte Observer, published on the 1st of March, 2011, entitled James Taylor Honored by White House. This is by Barbara Barrett. Carborough favorite son James Taylor will be honored by President Barack Obama on Wednesday at the White House for his remarkable contributions to American music. Taylor, a singer-songwriter who wrote Carolina in My Mind and had 10 top 10 albums, was born in Boston but grew up in Carborough, the Orange County town at the west end of the Triangle. His distinctive voice and masterful guitar playing are among the most recognized in popular music, and his expansive catalog of songs has had a profound influence on songwriters and music lovers from all walks of life, the White House said in its release today. Taylor is among 20 honorees receiving medals in arts and humanities. Also receiving the 2010 National Medal of Arts are Van Cliburn, Meryl Streep, Sonny Rollins, Quincy Jones, and Harper Lee. Obama will present the awards at a White House ceremony Wednesday afternoon. The event will be live-streamed at www.whitehouse.gov. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Question #1, where did the Beatles' name come from? Actually, it was answer A. It was the name of one of the motorcycle gangs in the 1953 Marlon Brando Lee Marvin movie, The Wild One. The Beatles changed the name from the movie name, Beatles with a double E, to Beatles with an EA. And answer 2, the Beatles' most commercially successful single is Hey Jude. Answer E.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for an artist, group, or genre of rock music to feature on Rock Review, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 832-5138. So long until next time.